Thanks so much, Ryan. Hi, guys. It's us. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Welcome to the show. It's Wednesday. A lot of fun stuff planned, including the always popular Tony Fulmer and the equally always as popular Dr. John Duffy.
You know why it's important to have Tony Fulmer up today?
First day of spring.
Oh, my God. Very good.
First day of spring.
Spring
has sprung, Wendy.
Very good. I'm surprised you knew that.
Yeah. Well, I'm, you know, I'm a fan of the season. I like the spring.
I like the fall.
And I
love summer.
That, strangely, the fall is the worst, for me, of the four seasons, it's my least favorite because it reminds me, even though I haven't gone to school in years and years and years, I feel like that time of year I should start getting books ready for school. This is ridiculous because I'm not going to school. Here's a quick question for you. R. Kelly is scheduled to do three to five performances.
Still?
April 17th through the 19th in Dubai. His lawyers have filed a motion giving him permission, granting him permission to take his private jet to Dubai and do these concerts, after which they assure anyone who will listen that he will fly back to the United States and face his charges. Would you give him that permission if you were the judge in this case?
Yeah, because I think the shows are going to get canceled because no one's going to... I mean, who would pay money to go see him right now?
You know, this is interesting because I was with him in bond court and his attorney said at that point that he has no intention to travel, that all of these international concerts were set up by people who weren't his manager.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even like to fly. So
he believes he can fly, but he does not like to fly.
That's actually what he said in court. He said, despite the song lyrics, he said he doesn't like to fly. So all the intentions were at bond court that, you know, he was just going to surrender over his passport, which he had to do to make bond. But now it sounds like here's what Steve Greenberg, his attorney, has to say. He's got no money. And this is no secret because obviously he struggled to get out of jail twice. But he says that this is the only way that he can make money is to travel abroad to do these concerts. Because he can't do it here in the United States because no one will have his, shows. Yeah.
Will the Dubaians, is that what you call them, are they going to buy tickets?
I would imagine.
Really?
I tell you what, there was big pushback in Germany. He had two dates scheduled, apparently. There was big pushback there, you know, hashtag movements and stuff like that. So I don't know.
But wouldn't he be, whether there are shows or not and whether the shows are well attended or not, I guess is part of the story, but the bigger part of the story is, isn't he something of a risk to just...
No, he's a private jet. They can track him. He's not going to go anywhere.
But once he's there, once he's in Dubai, let's say what you say is true, and he goes there, then he's not on the private jet anymore. Then he just automatically can just disappear anytime he wants to.
I think he'd be easy to spot in Dubai.
R. Kelly would be, yeah.
He'd be moving his hands and yelling at people.
But he's got to be considered at least a minimum flight risk, if not more. Wouldn't you imagine? Ryan, wouldn't he be?
No money.
You know, I don't know. The big concern is there someone there that's waiting for him that can conceal him? You know, could he end up in in an embassy for some country or something like that? You know, some leader say, you know what, R. Kelly, just come here. We'll grant you citizenship. And
could he
fine.
Seek some sort of political asylum?
I don't know.
He would not want to stay there.
The alternative is a lifetime in prison here. You can live as a free man in Dubai or be a prisoner for the rest of your life here.
I have a sense that the judge is going to say no dice, but that's just me from what I've seen to this point.
Well, that German concert hall did cancel that upcoming R. Kelly concert.
When he handed over his passport, they said, "Oops, I don't think this is going to happen."
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. If I were a judge, and the chances of that at this point very very slim, but if I were a judge, this would be the quick. I want it. I got it. I want it. I got it. This would be the quickest case ever. I would just go, I'm sorry, who wanted to go to Dubai? No.
A couple of texters have the best question of the century. Wait, he has a private jet? Thought he had no money. Sell the private jet.
You
pay
have
your
money,
alimony or right, all of his child support.
All of a sudden, there's money.
He's also got a lot of friends, so I don't know whose private jet this is, if it's technically his. You know, one of the questions I asked his publicist, too, is, does he own that condo in Trump Tower? I mean, if he's struggling to pay $100,000 to make bond and $160,000 for child support, go live in the suburbs. Go get an apartment. Get
right.
Rid of the, get
and
rid
fly
of the
Southwest.
Yeah, go
yes. get free bags.
But apparently he rents it, and I don't know what the deal that's worked around. You know, sometimes celebrities have special deals. They don't necessarily do things the way we do, where they
correct.
Get checks at the beginning of every month. So I don't know.
It just seems like a dangerous idea to let him go anywhere out of the country at this point. I would want to keep him very, very close to home until after this trial. That's just me. I don't know what the judge would be thinking in letting him go overseas. It just seems nothing but dangerous.
I mean, part of the deal was hand over your passport.
Right.
I mean, they think.
And that was done, Ryan, you said?
Yeah, yeah.
It was done.
If we go to another case, and I don't want to mix them together, but they're kind of running parallel to each other in Chicago. I mean, Jussie Smollett has to ask permission now to go visit his attorneys in L.A. and New York. I mean, he's got to give them permission to
go do
that.
And that's within the boundaries of the United States. This is an even bigger risk to let him go elsewhere.
How's that all going for Jussie Smollett?
Not so great. Not so great. Although he still maintains innocence.
Which is just shocking to me.
Gutsy and shocking. Yeah.
Mornings at Q101?
Gutsy and shocking, Mornings Q101. We'll take a quick break, and then there's a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Wendy, a quick text about R. Kelly. We were just telling you the story that his lawyers have petitioned the court to let him travel and do some concert dates in Dubai. This text from the 630 area code. Oh, sure. Let R. Kelly go. Take him for his word. He'll come back. I mean, we got to trust criminals to do the right thing. We could always trust convicted felons to turn in their guns because we sent them a letter asking them to do it. We have learned that criminals are always on the up and up. That's why they're criminals.
I would like to comment on that, but not R. Kelly related. The sending notification that you have lost gun privileges, if they can contact you to send a letter, why can't they do a follow-up and go collect that gun?
A great question. I don't know the answer to that.
That's what they're working
they're
on.
They're trying
now.
To make that happen.
What Illinois State Police said is they've got about 10,000 of those a year that never go responded to. So it sounds like it's just a lot of people. But that's obviously a weakness that they're trying to fix right now.
Because it just seems so bizarre to me if like somebody sent you a letter saying stop using your iPad.
Right.
I'd be like, okay, but right. I wouldn't.
And it's weird, too, the restrictions that apparently, you know, your ability, you can maybe pass your gun. If you can't legally own the gun, you should be able to give it to someone, perhaps a family member, who can have the gun. I mean, it has to be legally authorized. You have to sign it over. But, you know, there's some questions there, too. Well, wait, if you give it to a family member, can't the family member just give it back? So there are a lot of strange questions like that.
But that's a great that's the ultimate question.
Yeah, just
it
go
just
get it. Show up on at the door and say,
pick it up. We're here for your gun.
That being said, I want everyone to keep in mind too what we saw in Rockford. You know, with a situation with an arrest warrant where all of a sudden it turned into a gunfight. You know, you don't want 10,000 people who you sent letters to now be getting into gunfights with police. You know, for not wanting to give their gun up. So you know, I mean, there's a risk, I guess, in both perspectives.
But that question is in part what sells more guns, because what happens is whenever Democrats are in office, there's always the rumor that Barack Obama is going to come to your house and he's going to take your gun. You better go buy more
Hillary
guns.
Hillary was going to do that for
Hillary
sure.
Hillary Clinton is also going to come and take your guns. But when Republicans are in office, that tends to go away a little bit and they don't sell as many guns. But there's always that fear. The president's going to come to your house. He's going to take your guns. You got to do something. Because presidents do that all the time. You don't see it in the news, but presidents are always going door to door, taking away people's guns. That's part of what presidents do.
That's what the Queen did, right? That's
the
why
Queen,
we got out of there.
She was famous for taking people's guns.
Can't let the Queen push
door
you
to door.
Yeah. Hello.
Hello. I want your gun.
No.
And then they throw
a couple red coats behind her.
Right. Right.
Just hand over the guns. All right.
Right.
And then also, I heard yesterday that USC has raised their tuition. Did you hear that?
Oh, great timing on that.
But they said they haven't done it since the 60s, but this is just...
Are they amazed at the irony of the timing of that? Did they apologize?
No.
No, this has nothing to do with the scandal, but we are raising tuition.
I heard it on the news on this very station, and I was shocked to hear that. I thought, you know, maybe it would become easier to get in just because, so parents wouldn't do
right.
this kind of thing.
Right.
But no. It's like $59,000.
Is it for everybody, or if you have a show on the Hallmark Channel, how are they doing it?
I don't know.
I don't know who else would be affected. I have no idea who has shows on the Hallmark Channel at this point.
I don't know. I don't know what's happening.
Another story reported earlier today. Steve Grzanich did this story about how much productivity changes when March Madness starts. Hundreds of billions of dollars, they calculate. Now, he gave a number, and all over the internet, there's different numbers, calculations of exactly how much money is lost as a nation.
Because people are doing the brackets?
Because people are focused on first creating the brackets and then either, you know, somehow paying attention to the games.
Do you care at all? Have you watched one game? Because I haven't watched a minute.
Well, it hasn't really started
yet. No, ever.
Oh, you mean in history? Yeah, I have. But never at work, I don't think.
Well, we can't. It's not like we're sitting at a desk. That would be bad.
If you're out there listening to the show and Wendy and I just start cheering or going, come on!
You missed it!
If you hear stuff like that, you know that our attention is slightly divided.
Now, are brackets legal?
That's the best question, because technically, no. Well, you can make brackets.
Anyone can make brackets, or braces, or parentheses.
Right. Sure. Commas are where you get the problem. What happens is that part of it is legal. It's the exchanging of the money that technically is illegal. But I don't know. Has anyone ever done jail time?
As long as you're not making money on it, right? As long as that money's being distributed, though.
Somebody's making money on it.
Well, somebody's winning money.
But it's not like, you know, 10% for me, 90% for the winner.
Yeah. Right.
All right, so what about like Super Bowl squares? Is that the same concept where it's not illegal, but that's why I don't gamble.
I think the law kind of looks, this is one of those things that the law kind of looks the other way on. I'm surprised employers look the other way as much as they do. They were talking about how much money is lost in Las Vegas during March Madness. Now, I already disagree with this because they were saying that businesses there spend so much of their time focusing on March Madness. But it's Las Vegas where people gamble all day, every day. There's never a second where people aren't gambling in Las Vegas. But they're saying that the businesses, the offices, just your standard businesses, everybody is so focused on March Madness, they're not paying any attention to anything business-wise. Why would it affect Las Vegas more than anywhere else? I would think it would have the opposite effect in Las Vegas, where they're so used to gambling.
Right. I would agree with you on that.
Very strange.
I'm not sure, and I'm not at liberty to tell if there was an email going around about brackets here.
I'm not allowed to say that either.
I know. I didn't ask you, even though your name was on it.
Interesting.
I mean, you know, the one thing that all of these surveys say, though, if you read a little bit further down, lost productivity, but a lot say that it also encourages team building, because now you have some kind of common thing to talk about around the water cooler.
Do you agree with that or disagree, Wendy? You think that's true or not true?
I don't
increases productivity.
No.
It increases teamwork. It increases
team building exercise. Yeah, because you're all talking about the same thing.
But you're competing against your coworkers. You want to win. It'd be nice to have somebody close to you win, but
you'd feel good if Marquette started doing well, right? I mean, you might not have any attachment to it, but Steve Bertrand does, and
I'm reading Bill's face and I'll answer for you. I could give a rat's.
I went to Columbia College, and we have not done well in the March Madness.
It all came to a head last night as I was watching Jimmy Kimmel, because Mark Hamill was on it, and so was Kamala Harris, and I want to know a little bit more about her.
Two of the stars of Star Wars.
Yes. But Jimmy Kimmel, is it Guillermo, the guy?
Yeah.
He's so funny, but Jimmy asked him if he's done his brackets and who he's for, and Guillermo said a team, and then Jimmy Kimmel said, who's your favorite player? And he goes, I have no idea who's on these teams.
I think most people fit into that category.
I have no vested interest in anyone.
Yeah.
I, you know, went to Illinois State for a little while.
Yeah.
And Triton College does have a basketball team.
But again,
not traditionally. Loyola's out of it, correct?
They're already out of it.
That's sad.
Out of the NIT.
That was a fast exit.
That makes me sad. That one I kind of got on board with.
Yeah, because it had so much local charm to it that it would be impossible to not get swept up in that last year.
If Bradley does well, I'm sure you guys can get swept up into that, right?
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah, I mean, they're the only school from Illinois.
Yeah.
It's again, sad.
Train Co. is not in it this year.
Who?
Barbizon School of Modeling did not make it this year. Those are the schools I like. All right, let's take a break.
We don't have a break.
We don't have a break.
We don't have a break.
We don't deserve a break.
But I will tell you this. It is the first day of spring, and even though yesterday should have been, because yesterday was gorgeous. Wasn't it like a perfect day?
Yeah, it was really nice.
Today, not so much. It's going to rain pretty much all day, but we need to get our outdoor gardens ready to roll, maybe your planters. So Tony Fulmer from the Chalet Nursery is...
I have to say something about Tony Fulmer. First of all, every time he shows up, nothing but phone calls. People have 1,000 questions for Tony, so get your questions ready. Second of all, in all the times he's been on the show, I don't remember him ever being stumped by a question having to do with plants or flowers. He knows this stuff inside out.
He's great.
So good.
He really is. So Tony Fulmer from Chalet Nursery is waiting in the PPG Paints green room, and he will be on with us after the news. Later in the show, Dr. John Duffy will be in, our show psychologist.
Can I say something about John Duffy, yes. Wendy? He's never had a phone call. He's never gotten an answer right. He's just the opposite of Tony Fulmer. It's amazing.
Dr. John Duffy was scheduled to appear at 11 o'clock, and I hope he still shows up. Little Tweety Birds, because spring is coming.
Rain has showered far a drip, splash and trickle running plant.
What is this?
What is it, Jasmine?
What is this, Jasmine?
A lullaby of the spring by right. Donovan.
I was just going to say it sounds just like Donovan.
He was in a sad mood that day, Wendy.
All right, Tony Fulmer is here. He's the Chief Horticultural Officer at Chalet Nursery, 3132 Lake Avenue in Wilmette. You can go to chaletnursery.com. Someone has texted before we even say hello to you that whenever you are on our show, it's raining. How do you figure
what's
that?
What's with that, Tony? Oh. How did you pull that off?
Well, then in July and August, I probably should come in more frequently. You know, we're praying for rain.
All right.
Maybe I should be in more frequently
smart.
Then.
Very smart.
Yes.
I would like to start with the rain. I know there's been some terrible flooding in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. I know our yard was this was the worst year where everything, we had a lake, Lake Snyder, right. in the backyard. And it's because the ground was cold or frozen, and then we got rain, right. and everything
the water's
was
just sitting. There's no place to go.
So how does that affect your grass?
Well, it affects all plants in a negative way, unless it's an aquatic like cattails. Because the problem is, and we don't think about this often enough, but it's as important for roots to get oxygen as it is for our lungs. So every time a plant is submerged in water for 12 or 24 or 36 or 48 hours, roots are being lost. And so anytime a plant has a loss of root system, it you know, nature in her infinite wisdom says, okay, I've lost this much root system. What can I support above ground? And so a lot of times, even on a house plant, you know, if you let it sit in the saucer for too long, full of water, roots are dying. After 30 minutes, roots start dying.
30 minutes?
After 30 minutes.
Jeez.
Yeah, because after 30 minutes, the soil is completely holding all the water that it can. And it's driving out the oxygen, and the roots need the oxygen.
It's drowning, Bill.
It's drowning.
It is literally drowning.
It's drowning, right.
312-981-7200 if you have any questions for Tony Fulmer. Springtime is my favorite time. I know it's happening because you see your tulips come up or your... When we first bought the house, I planted like a bunch of mixed colored tulips. And some of them have come up and they're hideous. They're like a pale pink and I don't
really...
You're
not a pink person.
I'm not. So I've been trying to kill these.
Surprising.
And dig
Wendy,
them up.
You're admitting this on air?
They keep coming back every year. And my grape hyacinth, again, when you just don't know what to do, you buy some bulbs and you don't really know what is available out there. So you plant things to fill up the holes. And now I can't get rid of my grape hyacinth either. What's going on?
Well, in the case of the tulips, there are a lot of people that would like to have that particular problem because these new hybrid tulips with the large flowers, what happens is they bloom really well for 1 year, maybe a second year, but because you buy these big bulbs, which give you the very best show, the biggest flower, they start reproducing and you have a lot of smaller bulbs that are too small to produce a flower.
Oh.
So a lot of people do tulips just as annuals. And put them in, and that's what I do. I put them in, and then I dig them up and replant them every year.
It's so exciting to see them busting through the earth, because then you know spring has sprung.
Right,
it's baseball
sure.
for you.
Oh, yeah.
It's the tulips for me.
Well, the other thing, too, is that tulips, though, are very attractive to deer and rabbits. So that's kind of a problem. But there are a lot of bulbs that have substances that are completely unattractive. So if you want to put daffodils in, if you want to put a bulb in that's never going to have a problem with animals of any sort, put daffodils in, and they just get better and better and better. Tulips generally, the new hybrids, if you get 1 to 2 years, you've probably done very well. Now, that being said, there are a lot of native or naturally occurring species tulips that tend to be shorter, and a lot of them have pretty mottled foliage and whatever, and those will tend to do what we call perennialize, and those will tend to come back for a second or third or fourth year if the rabbits and deer don't get them.
And allium is the coolest flower I've ever seen. It's a bulb
cool.
that you plant, and it's just like a long stalk with a giant purple ball at the
mm-hmm.
end.
Oh, that's
looks
nice.
Like something you'd see in
Bill
Mars.
Bill nodded knowingly.
That's a nice, yeah, I've seen those a couple times, Tony.
And those I can't get enough of. They're the coolest plant.
Most people associate allium, which is an ornamental onion, basically. It's in the same family as chives. They associate it with that big thing that's just slightly smaller than a softball and is that really, really bright, vibrant purple color. But there are literally tens, there's probably at least easily 100 different kinds of ornamental alliums. So there's a wide range of heights and choices.
I have all of them, I think.
Tony, right now I have an intelligent question, and later on I have a
you
stupid
always
question.
Have intelligent
I always
questions.
Have one intelligent one and then a dumb one later. Once a flower is a certain color, will it always be that color?
Well, theoretically, yes, unless it mutates. But about, you know, I've been in horticulture now for over 50 years, and there's always one person every year, and it seems to be peonies.
Yeah.
And they will call and they say, this was my grandmother's peony, and they gave me a start of it, and so I've had it in my yard for the last 30 years, and it's been white all these years.
Yes.
And this year, part of the plant is, or the whole thing is pink.
Yes.
And that's one of those things that there is just no answer for.
You know, our slogan here on the show, don't let your grandma get her peonies in a bunch. That's what we say, Tony.
I'm speechless.
Good. Mission accomplished.
Unfortunately, Bill is.
Mission accomplished. Later on, by the way, I have a question that will stump you, because you've never been stumped once on the show and all the times you've been on.
Oh, it's
but
easily
I've
done.
About, I've
it's
thought
easily.
Of a question to stump Tony, Wendy.
And I will say that I like the white swan coneflowers, which are just like a sturdy, it looks almost like a daisy.
Yeah.
But your traditional echinacea, your coneflowers, are a purplish pink.
I love it when you're ripping off these Latin names.
Look
good
at Tony.
For you. I'm glad I was sitting down for this. That's dazzling.
So I have the purple ones, which are common. They also yes. have orange ones, which are pretty cool. But there was a certain area I wanted white swans, and I yes. planted them. And I'm telling you, this is now probably my fourth, maybe fifth season, and the white is fading, and they're kind of getting pink and turning back to the original coneflower color.
Well, but are you sure it's the same plant?
Yes.
From the same root system?
You asked me that last year. Yes.
Okay.
Because they've always been white in this area.
Okay.
And I guess maybe seeds can blow, because I do have purple ones in the
uh-huh.
yard, too.
Uh-huh.
All right, maybe.
And the bees have been busy pollinating, so if you planted the seeds from the purple one, they might not necessarily come back if there's been a white one in the area. And we don't want to get into that kind of
all right.
biological stuff.
All right. Thank you, Tony.
Can we take a quick phone call? This is Ellen on the line. Ellen, we're talking with Tony Fulmer from the Shelley.
I'm never quick, Wendy. I'm like you and Bill. I love you both. Thank you. I've been waiting for Tony to come on the air. He saved my evergreens. I never knew I should have bind them up. These three in the front, you know, you're supposed to plant in threes or fives. So these special ones in the front were threes. And they had these floppy leaves from even the summer. So when I heard him say, I got to go out there. It was freezing cold. We've had gale force winds.
Yes.
Take them. So
we need a specific question, Ellen.
When do I take the binding off? I use bungee cords. And what did Tony use to bind his evergreens up with?
Anything that doesn't, as the plants move back and forth in the wind, anything that doesn't rub up and down and take the bark off of the stems. So bungee cords would be fine, because you've got that basically that fabric coating on there. So that would be fine. And now that we're through any kind of a potential for winter storms, you could probably take it off. But, you know, it's not hurting anything if you want to leave it on until the first week of April or so. Then you should really, really be safe.
Good luck
okay,
to you.
Can I ask you a question about my lilacs?
Sure.
They're 30 years old. I inherited this house from my auntie. Is there anything special I should do for the little aged folks? The little lilacs are kind of dying a little bit.
The important thing with those is just don't over-fertilize them. And if he's the large flower, what I call the grandmother lilacs,
yes.
if you want to deadhead them and take off the old flowers after they finish blooming, it'll be better, more apt to rebloom the next year.
Bless you all. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Ellen.
And learn from my mistakes. Wait till you see the blooms on the lilacs before you prune it, because there was one year I had a giant lilac bush and one lilac because I cut all the buds off.
That's a bad yield, Tony.
That's not good return on your horticultural investment. That's right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Tony Fulmer's here, Chief Horticultural Officer at Chalet Nursery. You can find him at Chalet Nursery, 3132 Lake Avenue in Wilmette, or go to chaletnursery.com. Or you can talk to him here. We're going to take a quick break and continue.
As soon as you said Barkhart, I remembered her.
And while you're up that way in Glenview, you can stop into the Chalet Nursery in Wilmette, not too far away, and you can go visit with the Chief Horticultural Officer at Chalet Nursery. Tony Fulmer is with us, and can we take a question from a listener?
Sure, please.
Mary's on the line. Mary, what is your question for Tony?
Are you talking to me?
Yes.
Oh, Mary Kay.
Oh, hi, Mary Kay.
Hi. I have this peace lily. It's the only plant in my house, and I'm so proud of myself that it's still alive.
Okay.
And I read somewhere that you're supposed to water it a lot and keep the roots wet. And I think you said the opposite when you were talking about plants at the beginning of the show, about the roots dying. And so I want to know how I should care
for it.
Okay,
the differentiation there, the peace lily, or spathiphyllum is the Latin name, so Wendy knows what we're talking about here,
okay.
Is a plant that likes to be moist. And so, but there is no plant, well, that's not true. You should never say that. But overwhelmingly, when you water your house plants, you want water to drain out equally out of the bottom of all the drainage holes into the saucer, or if they're in another pot. And then you can wait for up to 30 minutes. After 30 minutes, you should go in and pour out all of that drainage water, either out of the saucer or the decorative pot that it's sitting in. No plant really likes to sit in that kind of water. At least house plants do not. So that's the difference. Oh. It's nobody likes that kind of water around the roots all the time.
Okay, so if I water it, how often should I water it? Is it
I never put plants on a schedule. It depends upon the kind of light they're getting and what kind of a pot it is in and how big the pot is. But generally speaking, you want that the first day or two after that soil surface feels fairly dry, you could go ahead and water that and you should be safe.
Okay, and the tips of the leaves are a little brown and they've been that way most of the winter, so
that can be low humidity, or that can be erratic watering that you're keeping. It maybe it's gone dry a couple of times. Most often, it's a lack of humidity.
Good luck.
One more question: should I spray it to get water around it?
No, don't waste your time with that.
Don't. Okay. All right. Thanks for the tips. I love you guys. You make me laugh every day.
Thanks, Mary Kay.
Thanks for calling.
Appreciate it.
Thanks. Will last winter's polar vortex affect perennials this year?
I think, yes. In walking around in my garden, we had that warm spell. We had cold, and then we had that warm spell. And a lot of things are doing what we call frost heaving, and that freezing and thawing and freezing and thawing has lifted some plants up out of the ground. So some of the plants in my garden are sitting up an inch above. The root system is sitting an inch above the surrounding grade.
Yeah.
And
does that drive you crazy?
It drives me crazy,
sure.
Because I know there's a good chance they may be dead or really, really stressed to the point
awful.
I may have to replace them. It is. I'm wearing black. I'm going to put a black band. For sure.
That happened to my potentilla. It looks, you can see the root ball is kind of above the ground. That's not going
to
be good.
That also happened to my potentilla, Tony. Also happened to mine.
I didn't know we were going to get personal this morning, but
I
guess. What you can do, although it's a little wet to do it, but as soon as the soil dries a little bit, if nothing else, you can try and go out there and put a foot on either side and very gently try and push it back in the ground. But if it's been sitting there for 2 or 3 months like that and exposed to that kind of cold temperatures that we had in January, there's probably a lot of damage to the root system.
A lot of questions on the phone and text lines. We always run out of time, but a lot of them wondering about pruning. I leave my ornamental hydrangeas up and the allium. I leave it so there's something to look at during the winter, but now's time to prune what?
Well, so on shrubs, anything that blooms in the spring, you do not touch it now. Because any pruning that you do, you'll be cutting off this year's flowers. So those kinds, now anything that blooms in the summer, you can do some pruning right now without affecting that. But any shrubs that bloom early in the season like this, don't touch them now. Perennials, you should get in there as soon as possible before it gets any warmer and start cutting any perennials that you left up over the winter. Cut all of last year's dead stuff off.
Should we do one more?
Do one more, Wendy, and then I have a question in an attempt to stump Tony Fulmer. I have a specially formulated question.
Jim has a question about grass in his yard.
Okay.
Jim, we don't have a lot of time, so get right to it.
I will be. I got a question. There's a lot of places, especially along the driveway, where unfortunately the snow was heaped up all winter that just about is about white as the snow.
Ooh.
Have I lost that grass from winter kill or...
Well, no, the question is, does it look fuzzy? Does it look a little bit cobwebby? Because there is...
It looks just like, you know, the normal yard kid, but at the same time, it's just got this real white look to it, and it's so matted down, it isn't funny.
No, so just don't despair. As long as it's not an area where you've gotten salt spray, just wait and see, and as soon as that soil warms up and we get some warm days, you'll have a better idea, but it's probably going to be just fine. Most of our turf grasses are perfectly hardy.
Is it okay to, like, rake it up and fluff it a little
right
bit?
Now, no, don't.
Mother Nature sticks?
Right. Let Mother Nature take its course right now. What you don't want to do when that ground is still frozen is to go in there with a stiff rake and disturb that and compact the soil. So, no, I would leave that for right now. Okay?
Good luck, Jim.
All right, I appreciate it, bud. Thank you.
Thank you.
Someone has a new puppy, a rescue dog. I have a new puppy. Is there anything you can spray on your bushes to deter the dog from chewing on them?
There is. If they want to give me a call at the store, I will be glad to...
All right, I'll call you later.
I don't want to walk away without having the best shot at me here.
All right, Tony.
I'm fastened in here.
You've been on the show about a dozen times. I've never seen anyone stump it. More? Is it more?
I keep track. It's important for me. Yes.
All right, good. Here is the question. It is spring planting season, but it's also March Madness.
Yes.
Which NCAA basketball team is named after a plant or flower? Take it, Tony Fulmer.
I'm stumped. You got me. That's sports. That's sport. Sports horticulture is not my specialty.
There are different branches.
You mean sporticulture? Are you talking about sporticulture, Tony?
I don't want to talk about sporticulture.
Can I give you a hint?
Sure.
Ohio State.
Buckeyes.
Tony got it.
That's good. And
Bill, do you know the Latin name for Buckeye?
Buckeyes. Ohio State of Buckeyes.
Back at you. That's back at you. It's Aeschylus.
Yep.
Okay.
Is it? Wow.
Aeschylus, yes.
Very nice.
You are amazing.
Thank you, Wendy.
No, Tony.
Thank you.
It's always fun to be here.
It's kind of overwhelming getting back into the garden after this rough, tough, polar vortexy winter that we had. But there is hope. Hopefully this wet weather will go away. I have seen people asking about blooms that have come up and then it got cold again.
On bulb flowers?
Yes.
That's the beauty of those bulb flowers. They have evolved over, you know, millions of years to deal with this kind of cold and erratic weather. So they have their own insulation. So as long as you don't have flowers that are starting to open, the flower bud tissue would be the most susceptible. But if you just have leaves or even really tightly closed those buds, snow and cold weather don't affect them.
That's great news.
Great
Absolutely
news.
Good. Are
good
you
news
proud
for
that
Bill.
You stumped him?
Yeah. Well, no, I didn't. He ended up getting it.
Well,
correct.
You had to give him.
No, I gave him a hint.
But it was sporticulture. You got it.
Sporticulture.
It's a new segment on the show, Wendy. Sporticulture with Tony Fulmer.
All right. Well, here's the idea, listeners. You can stop by the Chalet Nursery in Wilmette and talk to Tony Fulmer, Chief Horticultural Officer at Chalet Nursery. Maybe Bill Leff will be there, and he is the Chief Sporticultural Officer. Maybe you can
see Tony. We'll be happy, and we'll take you over to Panda Express for lunch.
He has to get that in.
Right across the street, Wendy. It's silly to not go there.
Oh, my God. ChaletNursery.com. You can also find him on Twitter, Instagram, at Chalet Nursery. Tony, happy spring.
Happy spring to you.
Bye, Tony. Thanks for coming by.
It's always my pleasure.
We'll take a break, and then...
Coming up, the stories that matter with Ryan Burrow from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Thank you, Ryan. Good for Dum Dums and Tootsie Roll. That's all I have to say.
Well, not good for Tootsie Roll.
Oh, that's true.
Good for
so
Dum-Dum.
Sorry. Clinical psychologist, certified life coach, parenting and relationship expert, host of Better, a podcast with his wife. Dr. John Duffy is with us. Thank you for coming back. You're our show psychologist.
Hi, guys. I'm always happy to be here.
It seems like more and more we have issues we would like to discuss with you. This whole Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin and parents trying to get their kids in to school, which shows like absolutely no faith in your kid.
It's just that fundamentally is the problem, right? I mean, you know, like we can talk about how sensational that story is, but underneath it is that idea that, you know, my kid can't be successful on her own. I need to find a way to buy her way into a school. And the odds of that child being successful in a school where you have to do that anyway, where you feel compelled to do that, is missing an enormous boat that I think parents miss a lot. We tend to go for the reach school, the best school my kid can get into, because that's going to afford him or her the best opportunity. That's not my experience. My experience would suggest if your kid lights up walking onto a campus or says, I like the way these people feel, mm-hmm. I like the way this place feels, it has this major I want, goodness of fit feels like an overused term, but for college, I can't imagine something that's more useful. So if it feels like your kid fits in the school, even if it's like, I think you can go a tier higher,
right,
go with the goodness of fit, because undoubtedly your child's going to be more successful there than pressing really hard for the Ivies. And I work with people who do that, who really press for this high, high tier.
Sure.
And sometimes they achieve it, and those kids will tell me, it's not that satisfying. It's really stressful. It's really hard, and I'm not sure I'm going to be happy here.
I have a couple questions about this case from different directions. Question number one, I'm sure you saw the video of one of Lori Loughlin's daughters talking about what she wants school to be, that she's really in it for the parties and for the drinking, and the school part of it, not so important. If you're a parent and you hear your child speaking like that, what's your next best move?
I think you want to sit her down, right? So that's a little complicated by the fact that she's kind of Insta-famous. This is a YouTube video. It's gotten, you know, hundreds of thousands of views.
Yeah.
So she's presenting a certain image.
Yeah.
But I think it's worth sitting down with her and saying, what image is it really that you want to convey out there, right? You know, do you really want to say that something as important as school you're not interested in? You know, and what do you think people – what's the reception to that? In other words, if you saw that from somebody else, how would you read that person? You know what I mean? Because kids are pretty intuitive, and they have empathy, and they can attend to something like that. I would encourage parents to ask their kids that. Like, you know, how do you think that falls?
Do you think that makes us look? That's what I would say.
You know,
it's embarrassing.
Listen, parenting is hard enough as it is, right? And
John, I would feel, if that was one of my daughters, I would feel like on some level I had failed.
Right. Right. No, I get that.
I have failed them. They're failing me.
Yeah.
Everybody's losing in this situation.
Right, right, right. No, I get that. I think you could also make a case, though, just to play a counterpoint for a second, that at the very least, she's being honest about it, right?
Yeah.
She's
because a lot of kids feel that way and don't say it.
Exactly. So, but I'm not sure that she's providing anything that's solution oriented,
right?
She's not saying like, if you don't care about school, here's how you get engaged in it. She's saying, I'm just in it for the parties, and that's it. You know what I mean? So I think that video probably begs another 20 seconds where she says, but here's what I'm going to do to kind of get into it a little enough,
right?
You know?
My other question really quickly is, what sort of relationship do you expect parents and kids to have going forward when something like this happens? How do you mend that fence? Obviously, the parents didn't have enough faith in them to be able to achieve anything on their own. They had to kind of buy the achievement end of it. So what kind of relationship going forward do you think they'd have?
I think as parents, you have to cop to, you made a big mistake, right? You know what I mean? Not just legally, but I made a big mistake on your behalf by not showing faith in you. And I actually do believe that there's a lot you can accomplish. And that might not mean that you get into USC, because clearly I didn't have faith that you could do that,
right?
You know? But that doesn't mean I don't believe in you as a person. So I apologize for what I did on your behalf, but I believe in you. And so whatever we need to do to repair that, let's talk that out, and you can have it out at me too.
Don't you wonder, though, if these aren't the first times that the parents helped out? Like, maybe there was a cheerleading squad that maybe, hey, I'm Lori Loughlin, is there any way you can, I mean, it's, I don't know that this just people wake up and do this. I feel like they've been maybe helping their kids along, and we all want to help our kids
for sure
to an extent.
Yes, but for sure. You know, I've been part of situations where people have written and said, you know, like, oh, my kid's not doing that well on the ACT. Is there a letter you can write to get him or her extra time? You know, so there's all sorts of things we do as parents to kind of game the system so that our kids get an advantage, right? Mm-hmm. And these parents took it to, you know, an absurd end. But I think, yeah, I would guess you're right for sure, Wendy, that this is not the first time that something like this happened. Did we buy our way one way or another? You know, like, hey, I'll host the fundraiser or right. whatever. You know what I mean? Like, and then will she make the cheerleading team? You know, with a wink and a nod, I'm guessing that there's a yes attached to that.
Monica Lewinsky is in the news, coming forward with she was on with John Oliver.
She was, yeah.
Your thoughts on what happened to Monica Lewinsky and the way she's been dealing with it?
Yeah, I think oddly enough, after 21 years or so since this all happened, her story feels wildly relevant to me in that I work with kids who are bullied online and can relate directly to what she's gone through, feeling like dehumanized and, you know, kind of relentlessly picked on as if she doesn't matter at all. You know, so I've worked with people who feel precisely the way she said she felt. So I'm actually really grateful to her, because I probably told in the last 3 or 4 days, 4 or 5 kids, watch this interview. You know, if you feel like you're the only one who suffered this, what you're not going to believe what this woman went through.
She said at one point, I don't know if you've seen the interview yet, Wendy. Did
no,
you see
not
it?
All of it.
All right. So this aired Sunday night on This Week Tonight with John Oliver on HBO. So the question came up, would it have been easier or harder had this happened when the internet was around?
Right.
And the answer was both.
Yes.
Because it would have been a nonstop barrage of people ripping her to shreds as they do everything online. But she also said every once in a while somebody would have said something encouraging, and she needed to hear that, and she wasn't really getting that at the time.
Yeah, you can imagine that amidst the turmoil and the attacks from all different kinds of media, like social media to all the, you know, 24-hour news channels, she would have been inundated with negative data about herself. But there probably underneath it all would have been a, you know, Monica for President hashtag as
right.
well. You know?
Right.
So, you know, and to hear her talk about it, and to hear kids talk about stuff like this, those few people who issue support, that means a lot.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? You can cling to that. And she kind of suggested that it could be a life or death thing. She wrote a piece for Vanity Fair a couple of years ago where she said a couple of times she considered suicide.
Yeah.
And I really do believe that's true, that, you know, like those few notes of support can carry somebody
mm-hmm.
and can keep them going.
I thought it was brave of her, and she helped people by talking about it.
For sure. No doubt.
Speaking of suicide, there was a news report. If your kid is struggling with depression or anxiety, is isolated, we see signs of the unfortunate possibility of suicide. There are some kids that present no signs whatsoever.
Right.
We're going to take a break and talk about this, because I think you can really help some people. He's Dr. John Duffy, clinical psychologist. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And you can call us 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We're talking with Dr. John Duffy. John, I saw something that you shared. Was it CBS News?
It was, yeah. CBS News this morning, I think, from Sunday.
About a family, and I think we should all watch it, and we should all learn from it. And God, congratulations to the parents for, I know, helping so many other people by coming out with the story. Explain.
Yeah, so these parents were willing to, they lost their daughter to suicide about 4 or 5, maybe 6 months ago. And their daughter did not fit the profile of what you would expect a suicidal teenager to look like. There were videos of her laughing, playing the ukulele. She's engaged with her parents. She talks to them every day. She does really well in school. She has friends. So any of the markers that I could think of as a professional, I'm thinking, okay, that one's not there. That one's not there. That one's not there. So these parents really had very little to work with. And then one day, her after a vacation that seemed
family
like
vacation.
That she was very engaged in. She took her own life. And then in the wake of that, they found these journals. And this was a particularly brutal part of the story where you could feel her self-loathing and questioning herself over and over and over again in these journals. And I can't imagine what it was like for the parents to see these for the first time. But the courage to have them read on national television, their point being they didn't want their daughter to die in vain. And they, I think, recognized something that my field is slow to recognize, that the markers that we expect to see for suicidal kids, they're no longer that reliable, that any kid can be suicidal. And so I think the cautionary tale is, if you have the honor roll kid who seems really connected and top of the class and, you know, captain of the cheerleading team or you know, the quarterback, it's still worth sitting down and asking them, hey, are you okay? Mm-hmm. I really want to know, you know, because I could tell these parents lamented not asking that question. To their point, they were never given a cue to do that, you know?
But, John, will that kid be honest if a mom or dad is to say, I need to know, are you okay? Will most people in that situation be honest and say that they are not okay?
Here's the strange thing about it. Somebody told me this when I was in training, and I didn't believe them. They said if you ask a young person, are you feeling hopeless, are you feeling suicidal, they will tell you. In 24 years of practice, I've always found that to be the case. And I've asked a couple of people a couple of months afterwards, why were you honest with me? If you were suicidal, why did you tell me you were suicidal? And what they've typically shared to a child was, well, I didn't want to die. I don't think anybody wants to die. I just felt so hopeless that I got this fog that suggested nothing else is going to do. You know, this is the only possible route to go to end the pain. So the point is to end the suffering that I'm going through. It's not necessarily to stop living, you know? So, yes. So if parents ask that question, I have a lot of faith that if you've got something in the emotional bank account with your kid, they're going to tell you the truth.
You also shared an article, and I don't know if this is technically what it was called, but functional depression, where just like this young girl, her exterior was everything was going for her, and she was coping with everything in life. But inside, there was so much hate and self-doubt.
Yeah.
A lot of people function with that depression deep down inside, don't
they? Absolutely. And it's confounding, right? Because you think depressed people, we have this picture of depression as being sedentary, right? That we're sitting on the couch and we're rocking back and forth and we're, you know, in the dark.
Right.
But an awful lot of depressed people are out there functioning in the world. And these are the people who make me most nervous because, again, they don't show the signs of depression. And so it's worth asking almost anybody. It's worth asking coworkers, hey, are you good? You know, like checking in with people, because sometimes people feel like the only way that they can keep going and stay alive is just to keep doing their job or keep going to school and doing all the assignments. And some people do them exceptionally well, like function at a very high level so that it looks even less likely. And they want it that way. They plan it that way. And part of it is, if I ever intend to do anything, nobody will be the wiser. Nobody's going to stop me.
You described this girl as being buried in self-loathing.
Yeah.
How does it get that bad? What happens that makes it that bad?
Well, I think part of it is sometimes it can be as simple as somebody posts something negative to you about online. Somebody says something negative to you in the hallway. But there is this default that a lot of kids have now that we might not have had a generation ago that starts with self-loathing. And you've got to prove yourself to yourself. Yeah. You know what I mean? So an awful lot of kids don't think much of themselves and feel like they should have accomplished something by 12 or 13 or 14 years old in their lives. When, you know, I think back to when I was that age and I thought I didn't know what depression was and I hadn't accomplished anything and didn't even think about it. But these kids are super aware of the world and the landscape of their emotional lives at really young ages, because they're exposed to so much from 8, 9, 10 years old.
Sure.
They develop a point of view, and they understand the nature of emotion from really young ages, yeah. You know? And that seems like a great thing, and empathy is drawn from that. But also, depression can set in much earlier than it would have otherwise.
What do you do to a kid that doesn't have any self-worth? What do you say to them? That's where I feel like outside help works a little better, because, you know, if you say, I love you, a lot of times a kid can go, well, you have to, you're my mom.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, I mean, to tell somebody, no, you should feel better about yourself, and that's it. You know, that's fine.
Right.
Right? You're, because you're my kid, and I love you. And we have this inclination to talk our kids out of feeling badly about themselves, right? You know, like I know I, with my son, I am a bleeding heart, and I have to fight this inclination to say, no, you're awesome. And,
right.
You know, that's, and if she doesn't want to be with her, you, that's her problem.
Right.
And she's going to miss out. But that's not what kids need. What kids need, by and large, and this is why therapy for kids is so effective, is just to air it out. You know, if they can air it out and talk it out and talk about how they feel about themselves, they don't need somebody to resolve that for them. If they can hear themselves say the words,
yeah.
Usually they can find the flaw in the logic and work with that. But if it's fed to them,
yeah.
Then they'll feel exactly like you're saying, Wendy, like, you know, you're just trying to talk me out
sure.
of feeling bad, you know, but fundamentally, I still feel that
it's
way.
It's a Band-Aid. It's
yes.
not a pure or permanent
but if,
cure.
But if it comes organically from them, which it can,
sure.
Then you've got something.
Well, good luck, everybody, because it's, you know, I say this a lot. It's super hard to be a parent. I mean, you try your best, you hope for the best, but you want your kid to remain alive, to function well, and to be happy.
Yep. Yep, those are the goals.
John, when and where can people hear you?
Yeah, so my podcast Better can be heard on iTunes or on my website, drjohnduffy.com, and just about everything I do, you can find there.
Perfect. Thanks, John. That's
Thank
Dr.
You.
John Duffy. We'll take a quick break, get you some news, and then more show. Thanks, Ryan Burrow. How come there was no candy news in that newscast? What happened?
I'm lacking.
Ugh. All right.
Doesn't this bring you back to
from strangers, you know,
to high school with the REO Speedwagon?
Oh,
roll with the changes.
So. Very much so, Wendy. Yes.
I am rocking out.
Are you rolling with the changes?
No.
There's been a lot of changes recently. Are you rolling with them,
Bill? We all have to, don't we?
No other alternative, Wendy. I found something on Espresso.com, Wendy, that I think you'll enjoy. I didn't even know such a website existed, but I was scrolling through the internet. There's over a dozen websites on the internet now, and this one, Espresso, caught my eye. These are all candidates for which invention had the biggest impact on humanity. They have 30
Ooh,
candidates.
Ooh, I like this.
So let's try to pick. What do you think? The top three, the top five? I'll throw them at you. You tell me if you think they're a candidate.
I have one.
What would it be?
Electricity.
That was a big one. That one's on here, as you would imagine.
Printing press?
Also on here. Hold on. I'll go in order. Although they're not in any particular order. But most of these, I think you would agree, are pretty solid in terms of important inventions. The wheel.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know who in their right mind would go, now the wheel's stupid. We don't need the wheel.
How did you?
What a better world this would be if there were no wheels.
I know transportation, but really, how did you get products from one place to, I guess, horses?
Yeah, horses are wheel-free as of today. In the future, wheeled horses are going to be all the rage. You'll see. The most
wait.
Amazing thing about the wheel isn't so much its invention, but that people relied on dragging things around for so long. Yeah, that was the only way to, or horses, or ducks. They tried ducks for a while. That was ineffective.
I don't know why my head and my vision went right to a caveman dragging a woman by the hair.
Yeah.
There were no
wheels back then. If you're going to bring a cavewoman back to your cave, you had to drag her. It was sad.
Couldn't give her a ride.
No. Horrible time that was. All right, so the wheel is right up there. Here's another invention. Tell me if you think this was important to humanity. I think it was. Steel. That's pretty big.
Yeah.
Steel's big. The key process of tempering steel was known to ancient Egyptians by 900 BCE. I'm not sure
before
what,
Christ and everything else?
Yeah. let's go with that. That's a great, yeah, I'm going to say yes to that. I've not heard the term BCE before. giving rise to the world's first steel industry. That was the Egyptians. Swords and knives were initial bestsellers.
Yeah, I forgot about weapons. I thought, you know, buildings.
Uh-huh. Girders.
That would fall under the building something, but I didn't think of the weapons.
Yeah.
Wow.
What were knives made of before steel, I wonder?
I love this joke.
I will give you the answer in 1 year. 1 year from today, I will give you the answer.
BCE?
Yeah, BCE.
Before Common Era. Wow, they changed it? It's now...
Is it always that?
BCE means before Common Era, and BC before Christ mean the same thing.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's news to me.
When did they add the BCE?
It must have been this morning.
I've never heard of that. Me neither.
And I'm not going to adapt to it well.
I'm not either.
I will warn you right now. It's going to take me a long time before I start saying that.
Would you say that that'll happen in like 2020 BCE?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes. Here's another invention. See if this qualifies as one of the inventions that was best or had the biggest impact on humanity. The compass.
Yeah. Well, you had to find your way. Ask Christopher Columbus.
Right. Did he? He didn't. He had a GPS system, right? Columbus did.
Google Maps.
Google Maps. 12th century Chinese and European mariners discovered that pieces of lodestone, which I was referred to in high school. Against my will. They were also the Flintstones neighbors on two episodes of the Flintstones, the Lodestones. They discovered that pieces of lodestone, a magnetic ore, tended to align with the North Star. Yeah. Iron and steel needles touched by lodestones for long enough took on the same quality, and so the compass was born.
That is a pretty cool thing.
The compass.
When you think about it.
It's very mystical, isn't it?
Yes.
The printing press.
That's
Gutenberg.
Yep, Steve Gutenberg.
Who would have thought one of my dad's?
Yeah.
Wasn't he in the three?
He was in Three Men and a Little Lady and Three Men and a Baby. Yeah.
That's a big part of spreading religion, I know, right? Because they started printing Bibles and a lot of people didn't have that.
That's so true. That is so true. As with many inventions on the list, the printing press was the product of other inventions. Paper and movable type first appeared in China, but as Germany's Johannes Gutenberg, Ryan's friend, who is generally credited with inventing a machine that transferred ink-based text and images to paper sometime around the year 1439. That's when the printing press was born. That's when Cup started with the Sun-Times. Same year.
What did he sound like then?
That's right!
Did he sound like that as a baby?
Yeah, baby Cup sounded like that.
He got spanked and instead of crying.
Goo-goo! The rocket... That's pretty important.
Yeah.
You got to have rockets.
Yeah.
And Johnny Rockets. Delicious onion rings, Wendy. Rocket propulsion originated centuries before the first manned spaceflight. In 12th century Asia, rockets propelled by a mixture of saltpeter, sulfur, and charcoal were used for military purposes. Way back in the 12th century. I would not have guessed that.
Nor would I.
That seems early.
Wasn't there a saltpeter in your graduating class?
So, yes, Saltpeter Donnelly. He sat next to me in math. Had a weird scent, if I remember correctly. Guns.
Yeah.
Now, whether you're a fan or not a fan, you got to admit they've had some impact on humanity.
Was it positive, some negative? Who invented the gun? Because think about it, that's a pretty astounding weapon that was invented.
I don't think he invented the gun. Guns have been around forever and ever and ever, but he made a specific kind of rifle,
right?
Well,
I know that, but I don't know who originally invented guns.
It says, we could jump ahead to rifles, pistols, revolvers, and more advanced forms of handheld weaponry, but let's give credit where credit is due. Around the year 1000, after having invented gunpowder, the Chinese came up with a bamboo tube that used gunpowder to fire a spear. This is widely regarded as the first gun.
Yeah, you like...
Like a blow dart?
That's what it kind of... But a,
like you see in...
I love that sound.
Thank you. I'm available for children's parties. Here's one that had some impact, no question about
Radio?
It. That, well, no, didn't make the list.
It really didn't?
No.
Are you kidding me?
Nope. The telescope.
Oh, yeah. Got to see what life is out there.
In 1609, Italian physicist and astronomer Galileo... Now, I always knew him just
Galileo!
As...
Galileo!
Galileo. and his cat Figaro. Wait, that was Pinocchio. I only knew him as Galileo. I didn't know he had a last name.
Galileo.
Did you? Lipschitz. You don't have to. You don't have to block that. Did you censor that?
No.
That's a last name.
No, I almost went home.
Cut it out. Galileo Galilei. Did you ever hear that before? I didn't know he had a last name. Used a small, primitive telescope to observe mountains and craters on the moon. He also noted a band of light stretching across the heavens, which would later be identified as our home galaxy, the Milky Way.
Yep. That's pretty impressive.
I didn't know he had a last name. What is it again, Wendy?
Galileo Galileo?
Yeah.
No, it isn't.
Galileo Galilei.
Oh.
G-A-L-I-L-E-I. What if he had married Gal Gadot?
I can't play
the
your
age,
name.
The age difference would have been astounding. She wouldn't have liked him. Because he at that point, he would have been, 480 years old. That's too much. The microscope. That's a big one.
Boy, the exact opposite
of the telescope.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
Right. Moving from observing very large things to very tiny things, the compound microscope was invented around the year 1590 by three Dutch spectacle makers, Hans Janssen, Zacharias Janssen, and Hans Lippershey.
Janssen.
Let's just go with Janssen. Those are three names. You would think for something as important as the microscope, those guys' names would be sort of famous, but
yeah.
That's the first time I've ever heard of any of those
guys.
There was a fourth guy, Shemp Janssen, who hardly ever got any credit, Wendy. Sad. Refrigeration.
That would be
an important thing. You got to have that. I'm putting that high up on my list.
Now, yes, because the ice box was exactly that, where you'd get a giant piece of ice, put it in a certain portion of the cabinet, and that would keep your food cold.
Mm-hmm.
So, you run out of ice, you're screwed. So, yeah, refrigeration, pretty important.
I would imagine the shelf life of most meats would have been here and gone in a day or two. But with refrigeration, they would stay a lot longer.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. That's why the cured meats became popular.
Yep.
That are all bad for you because they contain nitrates. But, boy, you don't need to refrigerate them.
While artificial refrigeration was first demonstrated by a man named William Cullen at the University of Glasgow, and back in 1748, it was a man named Ferdinand Carré who introduced ammonia as a vapor compression coolant in the year 1859. That'd make a great movie.
Who's the inventor of the refrigeration?
Carré. Fernando Carré. Ferdinand Carré.
Didn't he just sign with the Reds?
Yeah, he's with the Reds now. Okay. He plays shortstop. Yep. He's pretty good.
How come it wasn't called anything with his name?
With Carré in it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because that's a pretty cool thing to have invented.
Yeah. Yep.
He deserves more credit than that.
I don't know why he doesn't get more credit.
I thought it was Mr. Frigidaire.
No.
I know it's Frigidaire.
No, it's not. It's not. All right. We have more of these. The most important inventions of all time.
Which had
the most impact? We'll get to the rest of these next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. All right. Over at Espresso.com, they put together a bunch of candidates for which inventions had the biggest impact on humanity. They have 30 candidates. We're trying to narrow it down to 3, 4, or 5 of them. I remember thinking once that electricity, for me, would be the one that would be at the top of the list.
Yeah.
But I also remember a teacher once, this was in high school, who had a debate in class over whether electricity was invented or discovered. It's a subtle difference, but there is a difference.
What teacher was this? The debate club teacher?
Yeah. How'd you know that? That was amazing. How did you know that? What about the steam engine?
Steam engine Willie, right?
Steam engine Willie.
That's boxcar Willie.
Oh, okay. Right.
His great-great-grandfather, steam engine Willie. Boxcar Willie got free passes on steam engines because his great-great-grandfather invented them.
All right, the steam engine, to take goods and products all over the world.
The electric horse.
Yeah.
But, I put this under the wheel category. I guess the steam engine. All right. Somebody says Saran Wrap should be on this
list. Saran Wrap didn't quite make the top 30, but probably number 31 or 32.
The umbrella?
The umbrella did not make the top 30.
What do they call it if you're British?
Bumbershoot. That's what I call it, Wendy, because I'm British.
In your mind.
BCE, Wendy. BCE.
Which I guess that's been around for a long time. My
a lot of texters.
Said, my sister.
And
she said
sister.
We're both very ignorant.
Back since 1980 BCE.
Yeah. You've known that phrase, Ryan? I've never heard. You
no,
didn't
I
either?
No, I have not. No. I know that AD is not after death, though.
No.
It's what Anno Domingo, right?
Yep.
Is that what it is?
Yep. The concert.
Otherwise, yeah. Otherwise, you've got 33-year gap between BC and AD.
Yep.
I never heard of it. I'm
right.
sorry.
That's true. Until the 17th century, the power of steam had not been harnessed for any practical purpose. But all that changed in 1698 when Thomas Savery patented a steam-powered pump for sucking water out of mines. Much refined
not
it later.
M-I-N-D-S's.
No, mine. Okay. M-I-N-E-S.
That
much refined later, this technology would power everything from locomotives to ships.
That's pretty impressive.
I'm going to write a Broadway musical based on this, Wendy. You'll see.
What's it going to be called?
Hamilton. Is that name already taken? Here's one. I think a lot of people are going, how could this not be higher up? But again, these are just candidates. The automobile.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's changed everything. Now, the story that we always heard about the inventor was who? Who did you always hear invented?
Henry Ford.
Henry Ford, right? But they say a man named Nicholas Joseph Cugnot, or Cugnot, maybe. I'm not French. Is widely credited as the inventor of the first true automobile. Oh, I would not have guessed the year for $1,000. What year was the automobile invented by Nicholas Joseph Cugnot or Cugnot?
1873 BCE.
BCE.
Final answer.
1769.
He needed to get that thing patented.
Boy. The Frenchman's enormous steam-powered vehicle, which he then called a tricycle.
What?
Well, because the layout of it, they show a picture of it. It had a wheel in the front and two wheels in the back, much like what we our modern day tricycles are. But it was somehow powered.
So it was a powered big wheel that was the first
essentially,
car?
Yes. Yes. It carried four. This is back in 1769. It carried four people for 20 minutes and went at a speed of 3.6 kilometers per hour.
So literally, you could walk faster than this thing would go.
You could, yes.
So why would you take it?
I don't know.
The whole point of it was to save time and to get
right.
somewhere quicker.
Right.
But if you're going to walk there quicker, don't take the tricycle.
I wonder if an early Matthew McConaughey did commercials for this particular vehicle.
Jumped into a pool of water for some reason.
Right.
Oh, I'm looking at it. But now I thought this was the Benz motor car number one. So
it doesn't say that here.
Mr. Benz of
Mercedes-Benz
was the first. Carl Benz.
Oh.
In 1885. So this is before.
But that's
okay, so this
almost
was the
90 years later. Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting look. It almost, well, it does. It looks like a tricycle, but with strange things added on that I don't know what they do. Like in the front, there, what it looks like, remember those old containers that Big Macs used to come in, those styrofoam containers?
Yes.
There's a giant one on the front, but I don't know why.
It's like a buggy, but
yeah.
on wheels.
Right.
I guess that's what a buggy is, but three wheels.
Yeah. Here's one that I think you'd have to agree has had some impact on society and humanity, the airplane.
Oh.
What about the atomic bomb? Is that on there anywhere?
I think it is. I'm pretty sure it is, Ryan.
Seems to have influenced
a little bit of stuff.
Yeah.
The battery is on the list.
Yeah.
That was big. That was invented. Do you know the inventor of the battery? Because it will make sense once you hear this man's name.
Duracell? Mr. Everetti.
Wow. You guys are both so good at this.
Well, I got another text from my sister, Wendy. You and Ryan are now ignorant.
Congratulations, Ryan. You took my spot. The man who invented the batteries is an Italian gentleman, and his name was Alessandro Volta.
I like it.
Nice. Thus the term Volts.
Volts.
Yep.
I wish I could invent something cool someday.
Someone texted birth control. Is that on there?
Oh, it's not on there, but yes, okay. It should
That's
be.
That's just BC.
That Right. Let's take a break. We'll find out what's on the Wintrust Business Lunch, and then Wendy and I are headed to the stream for more of this sort of behavior. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Ryan Burrow from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.